Flip This is the Edge Radio Experiment. Today our theme is winter.
Now is the winter of our discontent, maids. Glorious summer by this sun of York. And all the clouds that lowered above our arse, in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Why I, in this weak piping time of peace, find no desire to while away the time and descant on my own deformity. I don't know. I think I'll have a descant.
Yeah. Growing up, winter was my favorite season. If you grew up in Florida too, you understand why. In Florida, there are really only two seasons, summer and winter. Summer begins around March and lasts through mid-October, and from May through September, it's utterly agonizing. Winter goes through about October through February. It's only cold in December and January, and maybe a little bit of February. Winter is by far the better season. The temperature is bearable, the humidity is low, and the sky is full of sun. I used to love sitting outside in January and February growing up. The crisp air, the glassy, cloudless sky, it was perfect. I also remember feeling freezing cold whenever the temperature dipped beneath 50 and bundling up under blankets and in heavy jackets. It actually snowed once at our house when I was growing up. It was only flurries and we could barely see them, but we kids were so excited. I loved the idea of snow growing up, and I couldn't wait to live in a place where it snowed. Of course, all my ideas about snow came from Christmas specials on TV and photos of snowy countrysides. People from the north would tell me how snow was awful and how they hated it, but I just wouldn't believe it. I guess I thought they were bitter or something. My first encounter with winter snow came when I went away to college. Before Florida State, I attended a small college in Tennessee outside Knoxville. When the first big snow came, I was ecstatic. It was gorgeous, and I loved walking around looking at everything and having snowball fights with my friends. Another big snow came when my sister was at college in Knoxville, and I visited her during my spring break. Snow blanketed the city, and my spring break was extended. This was a much larger snowfall than the last, which made it so much more fun to play in. What made it even better was that my sister's roommates had these large parkas that I used to sled down large hills on. That was a blast. After that, I only saw snow a couple times in Atlanta, but it was wimpy compared with Knoxville snowfall, which was wimpy compared to snowfalls in, say, Montreal. Also, in Atlanta, I had come to dread at least one aspect of snow. I was terrified of driving in it. This feeling is common in the South, where the mere mention of snow is enough to make people start running off the road. Speaking of Atlanta, winter there was only a little different from winter in Florida, the main differences being that it was colder and that it had long periods of rainy dreariness. Fast forward to New York, 1999. My first winter in New York was a shock. Before I moved here, I'd heard about long, gray, dreary winters, but I'd never experienced them as they were described to me. In Atlanta, I had a doctor who was from New York, and I asked him whether the winter there was really as gloomy as people say, and he told me that it was not. I've since determined that he must have been a crackhead. I was completely unprepared for my first winter here. I didn't realize that you needed a long, heavy coat to go outside, so I was freezing even under all the layers I was wearing. I was also unprepared for snow in New York, and it wasn't long before I hated snow with the same fervency as everyone else. For some reason, it never occurred to me that walking on the wet streets would soak your shoes and feet and make you miserable until you could get home and dry your feet. I also didn't foresee the enormous puddles that would gather off every curb, which you had to go to great lengths to avoid. And of course, I didn't expect the disgusting sight of the gray-black mounds of dirty snow that collected on the street and didn't melt until April. But the thing that I was most unprepared for in winter was the lack of light that characterizes the Northeast. New York winters, as it turned out, were dreary, gray, and dark, and there were days when, if you went to work, you could go the whole day without seeing sunlight once. At first, I didn't realize how it affected me, but after a couple of winters, I noticed that around February, I always got a little irritable and depressed. I assumed that it had something to do with February's combination of my birthday, Valentine's Day, and the crappy weather. Interestingly, while I'd known about seasonal affective disorder since I was at Florida State, I never considered that as a cause for my blue February mood. It wasn't until the winter that I was unemployed that I realized the importance of sunlight. That January, I went out to San Francisco for a few weeks, convinced that I was going to move there and start a new life out on the West Coast. Temperatures in New York were in the teens when I left, so it was great to get out to the 50 and 60 degree temperatures of San Francisco. For the first couple of days I was there, it was overcast and dreary, but then the sun came out, and that made all the difference. I can remember being in some park reading The Botany of Desire, enjoying the fact that the sky was full of sun. And after a couple of bright days, I felt 1,000% better, and realized that there really was something to this SAD thing. I ended up returning to New York after only a couple of weeks in San Francisco, mostly because I was homesick, and the pace was so much slower out west than I'd hoped. The first thing I did upon returning was order a light box online, which I've used every winter since. It certainly helps with getting through the dreary New York winter, but in the end, nothing compares with a sunny day. Needless to say, winter is no longer my favorite season. Even though I have my light box and my heavier coats now, I dread and hate the season, and spring can't come soon enough. And while I'm still not a big fan of the sweltering humidity of summer, at least in summer you don't have to wear a zillion layers just to go outside. And these days, instead of fantasizing about some Norman Rockwell-esque snow scene, I find myself daydreaming of spending the winter in Hawaii, Australia, and even Florida. So if you're listening in Hawaii or Australia and would like to host a neurotic New Yorker for a couple of months, drop me a line. I can be at your house in 48 hours.
Beep!
Winter in New York is not an easy season. It's cold, dark, snowy sometimes, and it seems like everyone's in a bad mood. It can be absolutely hellish. But you can make it easier by following just a few tips. And I'm going to give you those right now in my
New York Winter Survival Guide.
Let's begin with some essentials. You'll need these to get through the winter here. Sure, you can live without them, but you wouldn't want to. Let's begin. The first thing you need to get through a New York winter is, unsurprisingly, a long, heavy coat. That's right, not just any coat, but a long, heavy one. The kind that feels like it's made from an enormous fitted blanket that's been stuffed with cardboard or something. The kind that weighs 30 pounds and takes away all your shape. You could try a pea coat, but you really need something longer for when it's windy. Think that whole Russian cassock-looking thing, the long coat, and the furry hat, too, if you can find it. That's what you need. The next thing that you need, although it's more something just to keep in mind, is removable layers. Meaning a shirt topped with a sweater topped with a jacket. Don't just wear a really thick sweater with an undershirt. You're wearing removable layers so you can take them off. You want to take them off because, for some reason, the buildings seem to be heated all the way up to 90 degrees in winter. So you go from Arctic cold outside to tropical temperatures inside. Okay, 90 might be an exaggeration, but then I've never been able to check. I do firmly believe, however, that if buildings were kept the same temperature in summer that they're heated to in winter, people would revolt and start torching hot dog stands in the streets. Another essential, rubbers. This isn't what you may be thinking. I don't know what they're officially called, but they're the rubber things that you slip over your shoes when it's wet out so your shoes don't get soaked. You could also wear galoshes, but then you'd have to change your shoes when you got to work or wherever you were going. With rubbers, you can just take them on and off your shoes. You need these because of the huge puddles of slushy mess that gather off every curb when it snows. Usually it's a mixture of slush, fluid, and grime. And at least a couple times a day, you'll come across a puddle that you can't walk around or jump over. It's useful to have something covering your shoes for this time, because you don't want your feet all soaked. It's not pleasant. Thermal underwear. This is good for when you're going to be outside for sustained periods of time. Whoever said,
"There's no such thing as bad weather, only inappropriate clothing,"
was right about a dry, cold winter day. As long as you have enough clothing on, you're fine. And thermal underwear helps keep you warm. In lieu of thermal underwear, you could also try pantyhose. I don't know if this actually works, because I've never tried it, but I remember watching some Super Bowl eons ago where the announcer noted that the players were wearing pantyhose to keep warm. I thought it was a great idea. Of course, if you get pantyhose, either throw them out after a couple of wearings or get an ionizer. I think they're made with nylon, and that stuff can get stinky really fast. Several pairs of gloves and more than one scarf. You need several pairs of gloves because you'll lose them often. Same with scarves. If you're like me, you'll probably lose them every week. Not to worry, though. You can get those stretchy gloves for cheap at any dollar store or drugstore. They're not terribly warm, but they're light and stretchy, so you can wear more than one pair for those really cold days. Hand warmers. Hand warmers are those things you get at the drugstore that have a compound in them that heats when exposed to air. You can put them in gloves on really cold days, and if it's not extremely, extremely cold, they'll work beautifully. You can also put them in your hat, or anywhere you want to keep warm. A light box. Not because it's so great to look at negatives and microfiche in the winter. It's not that kind of light box. I'm talking about the light boxes they make to treat seasonal affective disorder, or winter depression. The Northeast can get really dark in winter, and it's not always feasible to get up really early and sit out in the freezing cold to get some sun. The light box provides a replacement of sorts for sunlight. Basically, it's a box with really strong full-spectrum light that you sit in front of for 30 minutes a day, and it keeps you from getting too winter bluesy. It doesn't make you feel like you just came back from the beach, but it should keep you from spending every moment of the day fantasizing about chucking it all and moving to Hawaii to sell seashell necklaces on the beach. Related to a light box is vitamin D. Since there's no sun, and your body makes vitamin D when you get the sun, you should make sure you're getting enough vitamin D. You can get it in that calcium supplement Viactive. Get the caramel one, it's good. Don't get the Rite Aid brand, it's kind of gross. Humidifier. This is absolutely necessary, because air gets really dry in the winter, both because of the low absolute humidity outside and the indoor heating inside. You need to humidify the air in your apartment and at work if possible, because if you don't, your skin is going to get so dry that it itches and burns. You can try moisturizers. Baby oil in the shower works best, but they're probably not going to be strong enough. Get that frog humidifier in Bed Bath & Beyond. It's cute. Tell them Ed Shep sent you. They won't know what you're talking about. The last thing you need is a hairdryer. This is so you can put it under your shirt and warm up on those cold, cold mornings. Those are the essentials you need. Now, here are some important things to keep in mind about winter in New York. Indoor heating. In a lot of apartments in New York, you can't control your indoor heating, so it's going to get really hot in your room. You'll have to crack your window and try to find a balance between the hot and cold air. Also, in a lot of apartments, the heat won't really circulate, so you have to have a little fan that will blow on the heater and circulate the air through the apartment. You might think it would dilute the heat, but it actually makes it a lot better because it spreads it around. Taxis. If it's really cold and really snowy,
forget about it.
You won't find a cab. Just take the subway or walk if you can. You'll only freeze yourself trying to hail down a taxi. Coffee shops. You'd think that on cold winter days and dreary other season days, New Yorkers would have a zillion things to do and not all flock to some coffee shop to take up a seat for 4 hours while they do nothing on their laptop. Not so. Be prepared to either not get a seat or stand around waiting for one if you go to a coffee shop. And if you get one, especially a comfortable chair, be prepared to guard it ferociously. Practice your growl and hiss now. This one's pretty commonsensical. Stay away from really windy parts of the city. Most of the windy parts are obvious. The West Side Piers and parts of Soho and Lower Manhattan. Others are less obvious. First and Second Avenue in Midtown can be like a wind tunnel, but oddly, when you get right up to the water, the wind dies down. You probably know the parts of the city that get really windy. Navigate around them in winter. Tanning beds. I knew someone who went to a tanning bed in the winter because he said it made him feel better. Maybe it does. I've never tried it, so I can't say. But maybe it's kind of like the light box. I guess it's worth a try. Maybe try some orange blossom coconut scented tanning oil and pretend you're in Bermuda. Lastly, remember, it's winter in New York and no one's happy about it. Well, actually, with 8 million people, maybe there's someone who's happy about it, but most of us hate it. So if your friends get snippy with you, cut them some slack. Everyone will be smiling and beeping again in May. Just wait it out. And that's my New York Winter Survival Guide. I hope it helps you get through another winter in the Big Apple. Beep. Presents Observations by Ed Shep. With the exception of Christmas, and maybe Hanukkah if you do that one, winter holidays are pretty lame. For most of them, you don't even get a day off work, and a lot of them don't really seem to offer much. Let's go through them now.
New Year's.
New Year's Eve is always a letdown, and New Year's Day, you're usually hungover from the night before. But at least you get a day off work, and you get to wear the hats and do the noisemakers and sing Auld Lang Syne, even though no one knows the words to it. After Christmas, it's the best winter holiday, but then it really is kind of Christmas's younger brother anyway, so you have to take that into account. As a holiday on its own, New Year's gets a grade of B.
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day is clearly a holiday created by Hallmark, and it shows. I feel like there are more possibilities that could be explored with the iconography, but for some reason it's never really grown, and I can't think of any way to make it better. Valentine's Day has really just become a day to wear a red sweater and take your significant other to dinner, and maybe give flowers or chocolates or a gift. If you're unattached, it's a day to feel
bad about that,
if you have nothing better to think about. Overall, it's lacking. I mean, why aren't there more Valentine's songs or traditions? Maybe because it's lame. I do, however, like this new quirky alone day thing that has popped up in recent years as a reaction to Valentine's Day drivel.
It looks interesting, and I'm hoping it grows into something significant.
We'll see. On the holiday grade scale, Valentine's Day gets a C-.
President's Day, Martin Luther King Day, etc., etc.
There are all these days in February that may or may not be holidays. I think that George Washington's and Abraham Lincoln's birthdays used to be holidays, but they were lumped into President's Day a little while ago. I can't keep track of whether I do or don't have to work on President's Day. I think it's different at different companies. The day itself certainly doesn't feel like a day of celebration, per se. Martin Luther King Day. Do people have to work on that day? I'm never sure. And what does one do on Martin Luther King Day? Watch CNN's endless loop of some Martin Luther King speech? These days, well-intentioned as they are lame. And collectively, they get a D.
St. Patrick's Day.
I'm neither Irish nor Catholic, so I have no interest in this holiday. It was kind of cool when I was a kid, the whole getting pinched if you didn't wear green thing, but as an adult, the holiday doesn't mean anything beyond getting tanked at a divey Irish bar. And even that doesn't exactly include everybody. I feel like there could be more done with all the shamrock leprechaun stuff, but then no one seems to be really doing that, so
whatever.
Overall, St. Patrick's Day gets a C minus.
Mardi Gras.
Does Mardi Gras really count as a winter holiday? I'm gonna say no. I think we need a new winter holiday. Something people can get excited about. Something to distract people from the miserable winter weather. After all, the weather is pretty crappy in December, but with Christmas and all that going on, you just don't notice it as much. February is the worst winter month, so I propose a big holiday for then. And I happen to have the
perfect one.
Solitude on February 3rd, the celebration of the birth of Ed and Cindy Shep. It has built-in iconography, but that will be covered in another show. It also has its own music.
My music!
And it has a very clear reason for celebration. The coming of Ed Shep into the world. This is a holiday that the world could come together as one to celebrate, and it's a holiday that has multiple possibilities for merchandise. I could see Solitude cards, Solitude candles, orange blossom Solitude garland, Solitude scents, dolls, nativity scenes, TV specials, albums, stories, etc., 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 etc. And a big advantage of Solitude is that if it got really big, it could finally bury Valentine's Day. After all, I see Solitude as a huge month-long celebration, kind of like how Christmas is to some today. But unlike Christmas, Solitude is the kind of holiday that everyone can get behind, no matter what religion you follow. If you believe in Solitude as much as I do, tell all your friends. Demand that your family put up Solitude decorations in February. Write your elected officials and demand they make Solitude a paid holiday. Demand that your company make it a paid holiday as well. Contact Oprah and ask her to do a Solitude special. I know I did. Every little bit helps, and if we all do our part, we could see Solitude celebrations
blossoming
all over the country in only a couple years. And isn't that just what the world needs now? Yes. B.
Observations by Ed Shep.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? Down the lane, snow is glistening.
Winter scents. We all know that I'm a scent freak, so why don't we talk a little bit about winter scents? Winter scents can be problematic because it's hard to think up particular notes that evoke the spirit of the season. The other seasons are easy. Spring is hyacinths and fresh-cut grass. Summer is fruit notes like melon, sparkling floral blends, and accords meant to convey the smell of the sea. Autumn, of course, is pumpkin spice, apples, and dry woods. Christmas time has its pine, cranberry, and cinnamon accords, but what about the rest of winter? Scent companies don't offer much help, providing candles and home fragrances titled after snow and winter, but smelling of peppermint and the abstract notes you find in, say, laundry fragrances. So what's appropriate for January, February, and the rest of the cold winter months? Let's delve into this. There seems to be a general consensus that heavy and woody scents are good for winter. In terms of perfume and cologne, fragrance industry pawns tell us that heavier fragrances are best for winter because you need a stronger fragrance to carry over through the cold, dry air. In contrast, summery calls for a lighter scent because the heat and humidity help light scents to diffuse throughout the air. Thus, a heavy scent in summer would, allegedly, be overwhelming. Woody scents are heavy as the wood odor components are heavier molecules. Thus, they work for winter. But also, wood scents work well thematically in winter, since you have the Christmas tree in December, firewood in other months, and coniferous trees, all of which are evocative of winter. This brings me to the first home fragrance recommendation for winter. Firewood. It's a great smell, and if you don't have a fireplace, there are a few options out there to help you recreate it. I can think of two candles, for example. Firewood by Henry Bendel, which you can get at Bath & Body Works, and something called Feu de Bois, which you can get at high-end candle shops. Feu de Bois is the better of the two, smelling more natural, but its price is obscene, usually around $52, and that's a ripoff. Go with the other candle for a somewhat true-to-life firewood scent. Other regular wood scents work well, too. Try cedarwood Texas oil or birch or mahogany-scented candles to create a winter atmosphere. Another option for home fragrancing is the scent of cocoa. There are lots of choices for you if you like this scent. For instance, every year the Body Shop seems to bring out a line of chocolate scents around Valentine's Day. Chocolate orange, regular chocolate. You could try those. An interesting note, however, about low-quality chocolate oil. At first, it can smell like a Milky Way, very natural and chocolatey. But after its top notes have burned off, and this happens pretty quickly, it persistently smells like pipe tobacco. A very interesting effect. If you want to avoid it, however, make sure you stick with a decent quality oil. I found oils from the Body Shop to be of pretty good quality.
Let's move on to winter colognes and perfumes.
Starting out with men's cologne, these are the ones I've always liked for wintertime. The Original Polo. It's coniferous, it's strong and velvety, and it just feels right for winter. I like to wear it around Christmas time. Catalyst. This is old and probably discontinued, which means you can find it cheap at drugstores and places like Perfumania. I like its dark, smoky, clove-like smell. Man 2 by Comme des Garçons. It's woody and smoky, a great blend for winter. Woody Sandalwood by The Body Shop. This is a dark, heavy, and woody scent. It's actually an oil. One thing that I like about it is that to me, it really just smells like wood, not a blend of wood and leather and musk and spice or things like that. Quiron by Helmut Lang, which you'll find most people pronouncing Ciron. This scent is supposed to be all leather. Leather top notes, leather suede middle notes, leather and suede base. It smells pretty leathery, but it also seems to have some orange somewhere in it. Overall, the scent is warm and soft, like a suede jacket, and perfect for winter. Now let's look at the women's scents. Of course, the big duhs of winter women's perfume are Opium and Youth Dew. They're dark, heavy, woody, ambery, and good for a winter night when you want to seduce someone. The plus with Youth Dew is it doesn't seem like anybody even wears it, so you'll be quite unique. I find Oscar by Oscar de la Renta to be a good winter scent, mostly because it envelops you with soft, velvety notes that seem ideal for a cold winter day. Hypnotic Poison. This is a vanilla-based scent. It has a lot of culinary notes, including caraway. Its effect is of a very vanilla-like scent with musky soft notes and other notes that I can't quite detect that make it a little more complex than just a regular food smell. If you like vanilla, you might like this scent, but if you prefer scents that really smell like cake batter, cookie dough, and custard, you might not like it, because Hypnotic Poison does have those musky and woody notes. Personally, I like it a little, but I also find it a little nauseating. I would have preferred just a straight confection-type fragrance with just the notes of vanilla and almond and caramel and all that. And you can't mention confection scents without mentioning Angel. And with its caramel, coumarin, cocoa accord, it's an acceptable winter scent. But if you don't have it, don't buy it. Everyone and her sister wears it, which makes it just too common. You'll just be one of the crowd. There's one more thing to say about winter women's fragrances. I've noticed that a lot of women in New York wear Shipra fragrances in winter, and this
is wrong.
Shipra fragrances are so named because they were originally meant to evoke the island of Cyprus, with its idyllic Mediterranean climate. Generally, Shipra fragrances combine citrusy top notes with floral middle notes in a very noticeably mossy, earthy base. The effect, while often powdery, is green, fresh, and summery. It also can be a little masculine. That's why Paloma Picasso, the standout example of Shipra fragrances, is often called aftershave for women. Other examples of Shipra fragrances include Miss Dior and Alliage by Estee Lauder. But back to winter. My theory is that women here wear Shipra fragrances in winter because they perceive them as heavy, which, compared to the transparent light florals that have flooded the market in recent years, they are. Nonetheless, they're totally wrong for winter. I support throwing gazpacho all over women who wear Shipra fragrances in winter. One final note. No one can really tell you what kind of fragrance is appropriate for what season. The whole concept is really kind of silly. But it can serve one purpose, creating associations between scents and seasons. In brief, the olfactory system runs through the limbic system in the brain, which is the seat of emotion. And that's why certain scents can evoke intense emotional responses, because of the structure of the circuitry. Therefore, if you wear Polo every Christmas and only at Christmas, then the scent of Polo is going to put you in a festive Christmassy mood every time you smell it.
That's one argument that can be made for deeming some scents appropriate for particular seasons. In the end, however, the right scent for any particular time is the one you like. Cheap or expensive, seasonal or no, even no scent at all. It's really all up to you. And that's your guide to winter scents. Happy smelling!
Detroit winter. Long after the equinox, hearts that caught frostbite when they lost, I got me deep in thought about the winter factor's effect on the crime rate. Escape the glass dome filled with a warmer climate. It's Detroit in the winter, the cold is a poison, it lingers. A point for beginners to hold on, avoiding the shivers. You either bundle up or burn rubber, but if you can't take the winter, you don't deserve summer.
Although it's a brown and the sky is gray, I've been for a walk on a winter's day. I'd be typing warm if I was in LA.
This has been the Ed Shep Radio Experiment. Thank you for listening and tune in next week. This is Ed Shep signing off.
You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.